blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangha Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, to confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts, the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the aid of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can draw that and end suffering.
Those who are new to practice, there are some back jacks in the corner. If you'd like to have one, now would be a good time to help yourself.
Looking at kind of the difference between surviving life and living life.
The difference between surviving life and living life.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what to say about that other than it's kind of something I've been exploring a lot recently and kind of maybe not so much exploring it, it's just so much kind of noticing it as it's happening. And it feels like on the one side of it, the surviving life, kind of for my experience of it, you know, kind of how it manifests for me, is kind of this rushing, this racing, kind of very, I brought this up the other night, kind of very determined, kind of like, you know, I'm going to get to the finish line, you know, what needs to be done, you know, kind of so the focus in the survival mode is all kind of towards the reference point is out there, the content. That's kind of what I get a sense from. And then on the other side of it, kind of the living, the focus is completely different. You know, the focus is much more on kind of internally what's going on. It's much more on the breath. It's like all I'm ever doing really is breathing when it's the living part of it.
Now, your body's probably still doing stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's still things happening. There's still the content that you're dealing with.
Yes.
But in the one orientation, you're seeing it really is focused on the stuff, getting through the stuff, getting to the finish line. And on the other, it really isn't. Even though you may be still engaged with the content, really your focus is on the breath, and you're just kind of breathing through it.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I've got an example. You know, when I first got up here on this retreat, I had a task to do, and you know, a set of content, you know, something that needed to, that I was attending to. And I've done that in the past on other retreats. And there, I mean, I have no idea exactly how it was different this time in the sense of like, anyway, the experience of it was so different. I was doing the activity, and as I was doing the activity, I realized that even though as you're laying out, the body was still doing the activity, completely doing the activity. It was just blissful. I mean, there was the focus of my attention was completely on just on the breath, just on, I don't even know how to say it exactly. It wasn't even like I was thinking about the breath.
Right. You're just being there in the task while it was happening.
Yeah.
And what would have been the focus of your attention otherwise, or what has it been in the past?
Previously, it was, okay, this is the task. You know, kind of all the stories about how it needed to be done. You know, do I race through it? Do I, like, not really do it? You know, kind of slowly. So there's, like, the focus would have been completely on kind of what the body was doing, like on the content itself. And then a bunch of stories about that.
Yeah, that's what I was saying too, because really I think we could say the focus of attention in the surviving place is on the voices, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I bet if somebody were to watch it from the outside, you know, this time and last time, I bet they wouldn't see a whole lot different. I mean, they might be able to tell a little bit of urgency or something in the past, but it really is a completely internal change, an internal difference. And so the one, it really comes down to the focus of your attention. And one, your attention's on the voices. Like you said, there's a story that gets kind of weaved around the content. And then the voices are pushing you.
Yeah.
And are kind of driving you through it. Mm-hmm. And the other one, your attention doesn't sound like it's on the voices at all. It's on the breath. It's just, you're just being as you go through it. You can still completely accomplish the task. Mm-hmm. You can probably do it a lot better, more efficiently, actually.
Yeah.
Because you're not being distracted by the voices.
Exactly.
But your internal experience is radically different between those two.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's great that you brought that up because, you know, the urgency part, listening to the voices, there's an urgency. You know, you've got to complete this task or...
It's life and death.
It's life and death. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the survival mode.
Yeah. Everything, it means something about you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Everything's at stake, even if it's just taking out the garbage or something.
Totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Washing windows.
It was washing windows. Okay. Yeah, this is life and death window washing opportunity.
Totally. Self-worth was at stake. You know, there's this intense urgency. And, of course, as you pointed out, kind of the irony of it all, is when attention moves out of all of that, out of the voices, out of listening to kind of that, you know, kind of slave driving machine, and just being with the breath where there's no sense of this needs to get done or this doesn't need to get done, it's just being right there, you know, like I was flying through it, you know, just really, really, but not in the urgent sense, so much as I said, it was just blissful. You know, there's that sense of like, what dropped in for me was the sense of all you're ever doing is breathing.
All you're ever doing is breathing.
Yeah, and it was just such a, you know, as you pointed out so nicely, it's the shift happens in here.
Mm-hmm.
From the outside, you know, I suspect there would be no difference in, mm-hmm. you know, kind of what it looked like. But that shift over into out of the survival mode, you know, that life and death, you know, everything's at stake, and, you know, over into the living mode, mm-hmm. you know, what, you know, there's so much, the focus of attention is sharper. There's a care that arises.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, washing windows is as valuable as anything I could imagine in the universe.
Right.
Not because it is or it isn't so much as it's what's there, and there's this like deep deep care about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a level of like a level of grace or a level of like ease or calm
mm-hmm.
that goes in with the kind of speed of being able to do it on someone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I bet as people listening to you, what people are learning, this is what I'm learning, is the how of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at those two different experiences, what would you say about kind of the how? Like how does that change happen? Because, you know, really, I mean, you're talking about sort of the basic practice is we have two choices. We can live in a world of conditioning in our language here, or we can live in freedom. And there's really two very different places there.
Yeah.
And there's a how in that, and that's what practice is the how as we move from one to the other. So I wonder, do you have a way of talking about that?
Well, a few things come up for me. One is really paying attention.
Really paying attention.
That's kind of the first place. So
to
kind of what's going on, both physically in here, as well as kind of mentally, what's going on, kind of, as you point out, the voices, you know, kind of what I'm hearing, and then kind of what I'm kind of physically feeling on the sensation of, you know, feelings, emotions.
Okay, so you're paying attention to what's going on in here, mm-hmm. and what's going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then kind of not indulging that, or not really engaging it, if you will, but just simply kind of noticing all of that. And then when I do notice that, having the kind of the how would be then just kind of moving the attention to like a focal point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I often choose the breath.
Uh-huh.
You know, so instead of kind of giving my attention over to maybe what's being said about how I'm doing it or what it means about me and stuff, instead I kind of notice that, and then I move the attention to just breathing and just, you know, paying attention to kind of the activity itself, maybe. Yeah,
so you learn, I'm projecting, and I, when I say that, I mean, I don't know what your experience is, but I'm putting my experience on your experience, that you've learned through practice that there's a place from which you can just be, and you can just, you've been talking about noticing, you can just notice what's happening. So from that place, you're not engaged in the voices.
Yes.
You're not believing the story. You're also not believing all of the stuff in there about the meaning and all everything that kind of makes it seem like survival.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also not engaged with it on the other side. You're not trying to disprove it or got to get away from it or make it go away or any of that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right.
You're just seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And from that place, your attention is, let's see, you have a power over your attention. You can choose where you want your attention to be. And the how of it is really as simple as turning your attention away from this, which is the habit. I mean, for all of us, the habit is for our attention to be engaged up here, and that's how we suffer. So you, there's a way in which you can just, because you're here and your attention is available to you, you can turn your attention away from that to something that is just here.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps keep you here in that kind of a magical way that everything that you're looking for is here also.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And of course, it is the practice, obviously. So it's not a situation where I end up here and then that's
there we go.
Exactly.
All
know, it's just like, you know, as we're sitting here and you know, kind of the attention will wander right back into that. It's the habit, as you said, kind of it'll wander off into that, and then I notice that again.
Uh-huh.
And back I come to kind of noticing being here. So
right. It's
over and over again. And the piece that was really jumping out at me that you said there was, it's not that I'm either engaging it, nor am I trying to like fight it,
mm-hmm.
kind of like another way of engaging it, a way of like,
mm-hmm.
so not clinging to it, not indulging it, the story or the meaning really that's coming up, but also not trying to like push it away and get away from it or avoid it or anything, but just simply kind of coming into a place where I can get a sense of it, notice it, and then coming back to, you know, the next breath.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Ashwini.
So I've been noticing an interesting thing of not being a someone who's doing anything.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of what was coming up for me in the last discussion, which is that it's possible not to be a someone doing something. And I had a really vivid example of that. I was picking some stuff up in a grocery store. It was a really, really, really busy time. There wasn't a parking space, and I was on a conference call. And
a lot going on.
And so I parked the car, and I went to the grocery store. And when I came back, it's a huge parking lot. It's like zillions of rows of cars. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out where I parked my car. And I walked for 10 minutes up and down, trying to find it, and I was starting to get panicky that I couldn't find my car. And then I just stopped and turned around and looked at the store. And what arose is I'd actually gone through one entrance, through something, to the other. And then I remember where my car. I didn't remember where my car was. It arose for me where the car was.
I see. So let me see if I'm with you. So in terms of being a someone, so you left the store. Might I say that you were being a someone looking for your car?
That's right.
And so the information wasn't available to you.
Because I wasn't the same. Because when I left the car, there wasn't a someone who remembered where the car was.
Right.
I was completely not there. I just assumed that I would find the car.
Right.
There was a complete level of paying attention to what I was doing, mm-hmm. but not aware of anything.
So we might say you were trusting that the information would be available to you.
Well, I wasn't even conscious of that. I was just, so my attention was extremely limited, mm-hmm. and I had no awareness of anything else. And I walked into the store, and when I came back out, when I was trying to be that someone to find the car, I couldn't.
Because that someone wasn't there, so
that
they wouldn't know.
Wasn't there. And so the only way I could rediscover my car was not being someone.
Right.
And so it's just such an interesting trust. There's a trust that I've had that experience many times, mm-hmm. that when I let it go, I will find it, mm-hmm. but I have to let it go in order to find it.
Yeah, you do.
And let someone go.
And let someone go, because that someone is a really limited perspective, right? It doesn't have access to the information that's there.
Yeah, and the two things that occurred was, again, if I was someone trying, I was someone who was anxious, I was trying to figure it out, I wasn't available to the awareness that existed, mm-hmm. that would tell me what that was when I got into the store. It was there.
It was there. That's what I was seeing too. Because so you were, before you went to the store, there was a whole lot going on, and your attention, as you said, was very, I can't remember if you said it's constricted or
focused.
Because it had you had your time to park the car, you had the grocery list, you had the conference call going on. You know, attention is all very focused. But in what you describe, I think there was also an awareness that was there, that was happening at the same time. And for that awareness to be there, of course, it can't be a someone, because the someone is stuck in this kind of perspective. So your attention is engaged, but your awareness, is there as you're going to the store. You came out of the store, your attention was engaged, but you weren't connecting with that awareness. As soon as you let go of the someone, the awareness was there, and because the awareness was there then and the awareness was there before, the information was able to drop in about where your car was.
And the coolest part of it is, I knew when I left the car and walked into the store, there was a very vivid insight or awareness of how I was going in. Mm-hmm. I had no idea about where I parked my car, but what I noticed on the way into the store is how I got to the store.
Right, you were aware of that.
I was really, it was just like something that folded in, you know, just like a really sharp awareness. And that was how I was able to find my car. Uh-huh. Not that I knew where the car was, but that moment of awareness where I'd seen myself going to the store was what clued me in, mm-hmm. later on to where the car was parked.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that so much can be happening at one time?
Yeah.
You know, that because we would tend to assume, I think, that if our attention is engaged like that, there's nothing else happening.
Yeah.
And I think that actually is going on a lot of times. When our attention is so engaged, there is not any awareness. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of information is not available. I'm in the store, I have no idea how I got here. Somehow, you know, I'm standing in the store and, you know, I don't know how I got, where my car is and also how I got there. But with practice, I think this is what you're talking about. The attention can be engaged, but there can also be like a sort of a field of awareness that's happening inside of. Yeah, and so you're walking in that field of awareness, and so there's all kinds of information that's coming in. It's not grabbing your attention, but it's like landing in your intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so all that attention is available again when you need it.
The other thing I noticed is one of the beliefs that I've been looking at is, if my attention is on being someone, that only a someone can know, right? So if my intention is in awareness, then I would be aware of what was going on. Mm-hmm. But if my attention was not on awareness, then I wouldn't know what was going on. And what I found is that's only true if you have to have someone.
Right.
because if someone was paying attention to awareness, then they would know what was going on. But what I discovered is, it doesn't ever have to be a someone. Mm-hmm. In fact, if that someone was there, they couldn't have found the car.
There actually isn't any awareness, even though that someone thinks there is.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. It was a really cool practice moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. That came up for me also in the last conversation, because in a place Dave was talking about, so there's a place that's here, and I think this is what you're talking about too, where we can direct our attention and there's awareness. If there's a somebody here, then someone can't live in that place. It can't occupy that place. That someone can only be on either side, like believing the story or fighting the story.
Yeah.
But to let go of the someone gives access to that place where, because I'm not someone, then I have access really to everything that is not someone, which is everything. And then, we can direct our attention, the information that we need can drop in, and what we're looking for is available there.
Yeah, the thing is, it's very related to what we're doing in the email class, but it was such a visceral way of knowing that I am this form is actually the intelligence that animates mm-hmm. everything, that mm-hmm. registers and records everything. And so to know in a way without someone knowing.
Right. Yeah.
Was an experience that I had in a way that I've never had that before.
Mm-hmm. So you might have an experience of someone knowing, but the knowing is really limited, isn't it? It's within a whole set of assumptions about the way things are. And so it's a knowing that really doesn't have anything to do with what's actually going on. And then there's another kind of knowing where it's like the same thing as an opening or a receiving or a willingness. There's an understanding that's there that's really different from this small limited knowing that happens when you're somebody.
Yeah, the feeling of it is like it's visceral, that it arises through some cellular feeling,
uh-huh.
and not something that is. It's a different kind of network that feels like I'm a part of that's sending me information.
Right. Instead of being isolated, someone who's thinking,
yeah.
and then drawing his conclusions and thinking that it knows.
Yeah. I had to know because I was part of what was knowing, not that is it was so internal.
Right. Yeah. Because you're a part of it, you can see, which is really different than being separate from it, analyzing and trying
and
to figure out.
And looking from outside.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the difference. The
yeah.
inside knowing versus the having to step outside to know.
That's good. Let's see. Penny.
I was listening to the first sharing, and it was very familiar back and forth being described of just being there, being at ease, being on task, and then mm-hmm. being off. And what I was seeing and hearing that is just like, when that shift of attention happens, for me, my whole relationship with life shifts. That when I am in urgency, what is the urgency about? It's the belief that somehow I have to do this because essentially life is against me.
Yeah, it's about something made up, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's about something made up.
Yes.
About something that really doesn't have anything to do with what's in front of you.
Yeah, and it's an orientation that says, I'm on the line, I'm at risk here.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't do this, if I don't get it right, I'm in big trouble. And often that trouble is never defined. It sort of like, reminds me when people say to you, boy, you know what's going to happen if you do that. And,
uh-huh.
Then you have to tell you what's going to happen. You probably don't even know what's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
But as a little kid, you take that in, and it's, oh my God.
Yeah,
it's
and
that
really,
relationship.
It is, and to relate to what we're talking about, it really, that's how it creates an I, doesn't it? It creates a somebody in the way we were just talking about it. So without that conversation, there really isn't a somebody.
That's right, and the somebody who's created is at risk and threatened somebody.
Yeah, it's scared, it's mm-hmm. fear-based. All this conversation is about me and how I am, am I good enough, am I adequate, am I going to survive, am I going to get what I want? So it creates this separate something that really has no access to the intelligence and entities, kind of as we've been talking about. And so necessarily is unhappy and deprived and suffers because that I, the creation of that I, kind of pulls us off into a place or we're no longer connected to everything that we need, which is what life is.
Right. And when I'm in the other place, the focused place, engaged with whatever's going on, nothing else going on place, nothing else going on, then there isn't that sense of having to work against anything. Right. I'm working with whatever the energy is. I'm just part of that, and that's where the I disappears.
And that's where the I disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we might say that the reason that you have the experience of just kind of going with life as wherever it's going is because there isn't an I there. As soon as you put an I in it, the kind of the basic orientation of life, of that I, is to not be in alignment with life. It's to be off on its own program with its own ideas about what's happening, and just out of the energy as it's just moving.
Yeah. And it was just so helpful to see that, because I've seen that back and forth, and sort of the unhappy place and the happy place, the light and the dark and that kind of thing. But I just heard in that, stronger than I ever heard, how the whole relationship in life shifts. Mm-hmm. And it can shift like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And back again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And would you say that you do that, or that it's done?
Kind of both.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
You know, I was just we were recently just some of us were on a phone call earlier, and what was coming up for me is that it's like it reminds me of those perception drawings, or is it a vase or is it two faces facing each other? And depending on how you look, it's entirely different. And when you're looking in one way, that's what you see. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking the other way, that's what you see. So you don't actually see both at exactly the same moment. So there's a foreground background to what I was looking at. And often, if what I'm doing and sort of being aligned is the foreground, I'm aware that there's a background of conditioning trying to get in, trying to draw me off. But if my focus is on the foreground, I'm fine. And in an instant, in the blink of an eye, for whatever reason, I can shift. And then the background becomes foreground. And it sort of goes like that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And that's why I find I can shift back and forth in an instant, either way.
Yeah.
So mostly it's a matter of learning to pay attention.
Learning to pay attention. And it's not a separate self that's doing that, is it? It's not a somebody. That's kind of a mysterious thing.
It's a kind of awareness that happens.
Yeah, it's like awareness is doing it. We sort of experience, this is my experience, we sort of experience it as ourselves because it's happening in our awareness, but there really isn't a my that is in that. It's almost like it's happening through us.
Yeah, because if I'm in the conditioned place, there's nothing in conditioning that would want to tell me I'm there.
There's nothing in conditioning that would want to tell you that you're in conditioning?
Yep.
Yeah,
so
nobody wants that.
Something else has to tell me.
He wants to keep that private.
So something else has to tell me that that's where I am.
So something else has to tell you. That kind of the reflection of life, I think.
Yeah,
Thank you. Alex.
Just what the folks have been talking about so far reminds me of my experience. I feel like I get this experience strongly in the kitchen when I'm like cooking or supervising or something like that, where especially on the street when there's lots of things going on.
Lots going on.
It's almost like a sport, really, because if I'm a someone in there, boy, it's just going to be chaos and disaster. Uh-huh. You know, it's like, just imagine somebody out there in the field, in a sport or something like that. Well, this guy goes here, and I'm going to go there, and then I'm going to plan them. It's like, boy.
And completely unavailable to the law that goes by.
Going on. That's not the same thing, which is what I heard in the last conversation about, like, you can also be there and do preparatory work, because that arises in the moment, too. Like, I need to create a shopping list, for instance.
Right.
You know.
That's an in-the-moment activity.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, now's the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the time to make sure we have all the ingredients and things like that, just so that. But those things arise in the moment too.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been really enjoying. There's something about that particular field for me, like the kitchen, where it feels like it's just so strong there. And it's like I'll just be working along, and all of a sudden I'll hear something like say, "Don't forget to put that in right now."
Don't you love that?
It's like perfect. I would never in a million years have like been able to plan that out, but it's like, of course it's supposed to be done there, because in order for that to be finished by the time that it needs to be, it has to go in now.
It's like kind of like life is back there with an apron on. It's cooking, but it doesn't have really have a body, so it needs to
go over here. That, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like.
Now, eventually, if you were being a somebody, that would never...
I've had those somebody.
We've all had a lot of those somebody moments in the kitchen.
That had to have been a somebody moment, yes.
Yeah, when it just doesn't work, it was flailing around.
It's funny.
You can know somebody was there.
It's like on a, like, it usually happens when on those days where it's the last day of the retreat, and there isn't two periods to cook for. There's a whole lot more to do, and it's like, well, I've got time to...
Somebody says.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just amazing. It's like you would think there's all this spaciousness, and in that spaciousness, there would somehow be an ease to it. Mm-hmm. But boy, is it that not my experience. Because it's somehow the infiltration of a conversation is easy to fall into place. Clouds being here, and all of a sudden, those insights just don't drop in like, put this in the oven or something like that.
You're a somebody being separate from it.
Exactly.
And in a lot of ways, it's kind of helpful, isn't it, to have it be so much that needs your attention.
Yes.
And also really helpful to have something where there's immediate consequences.
Yes.
So if it's really it's kind of like a science experiment. You know, you go into the kitchen, well, I don't know, am I somebody or am I not somebody? Well, I'll never find out.
Exactly. Boy, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, because it really does, it manifests in two completely different ways. You know, there's the internal way that people are talking about. There's the ease. There's a feeling like I'm just kind of going with what's happening. It feels good. It feels, time seems really spacious.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And then the other one is completely opposite. It's like, oh, my God, I'm in urgency. Things aren't working. This doesn't seem like there's enough time. There's all this chaos. And it really helps us see, the only difference here is me. It's not really me. The only difference is the process that's going on inside of me. My attention must in some way be engaged with the voices and with conditioning. That's what's causing all this to happen.
That's because our attention can only be on one place at one time. Mm-hmm. And so whether I have experienced my attention here and actually seeing what's happening, which is why Sherry seems to be constantly bringing that, it's like I'll say, well, I want my attention to be on the part of me who can actually do the job, just have the right person for the right job. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it's more about being here. Because the person for their job will show up in that being here.
If we're here.
It doesn't require somebody to get that person for the job to be here, because who will end up? We have somebody trying to find that person.
Well, life will take care of that.
Yes.
If we're allowing it, life will set it up so the person who is the appropriate person for the job will be the one who shows up for the job. We just spend all our time getting in the way. That's what we do. We have these better ideas about what should be happening. We believe all this urgency. We believe in a me that can succeed or fail or whatever is going on. And then we separate ourselves from just allowing life to take care of everything.
Yeah. It's a hard sell to someone who's got that kind of...
To a somebody.
To a somebody.
To a really hard sell.
It's a really hard sell because it's like, oh no, if I just let things be, boy, but it's so not my experience. It's like, and it's so relaxing to be in the other place. Mm-hmm. You would never, as somebody, would never have thought that.
Right. Well, the somebody is not actually interested.
No, not interested.
The somebody may say that they're interested. Oh, I just want everything to work. I want everything to be peaceful. But they're not. Somebody's interested in the chaos, the things not working. Because that's the world that they live in.
Yeah.
So it really does take a lot of awareness. It also takes kind of a lot of guts to be willing to let go of this kind of way of surviving.
Yeah.
It really does seem like surviving. Like, if I let this go, then I'm not going to make it.
Well, that's
so it takes a lot of guts to really let that go and allow ourselves to come here and just trust that if we do, life will take care of it.
Yeah, that's why I was relating so much to the window washing thing. It's like, to be put in an environment where the stakes are so low, and to see the kind of conditioning that will arise, and to be able to trust and just, okay, here's what's going on. There's really nothing going on. I can practice trying to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think this environment is so conducive to that, because over and over, we're getting messages about, well, it's not about, getting things done. It's not about the content. We're watching to see how we cause ourselves to suffer.
Yeah.
And so, over and over again, I can try to relax into that and have that experience.
Yeah. We just had a bird. So it gives us a chance to practice that. It gives us kind of like a low stakes place to practice that.
Yeah.
And that for folks who are here for the week, I mean, that's you know, there's a lot of space around the structure of the retreat. And so that can be happening during that space. There should be a lot of other stuff that's going on too, a lot of assignments that folks will have. But to be practicing that basic movement, you know, dropping the conversation, dropping all the stuff that's happening, conditioning, and just coming here. And then getting caught up again, dropping that and coming here. And then and sort of practicing that place we're talking about this morning. Thank you. Nikki.
As we're talking about this, I was looking at an example of, I think it was that background and the foreground thing, and this is a very simple practice opportunity that happens here often. So I was using one of the out showers this morning, and as I was done and was leaving, I was in the awareness of, you know, how I leave it and, you know, attending to the environment and, you know, leaving it as I found it and doing all that.
Take responsibility for where you've been.
And my attention was really on that, and then I got everything and got my shoes on, and I'm pretty sure what happened is my attention leapt to what was going to happen next.
Oh, okay.
So somebody was in some kind of a, I'm not quite here anymore.
So you're suddenly a somebody.
Yeah.
You weren't really a somebody before.
I don't think so. Before I was just kind of attending to things, and I didn't really notice a shift, but what I noticed is I'm almost back to my hermitage, which is a bit of a hike, and I all of a sudden realized that I had no body awareness of having flipped the free sign back.
Don't you love that? Wait a second.
And I said, oops,
what
that
was going
one thing
on?
I didn't attend to.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, okay, well, let's go back.
Let's go back. Yeah. Well,
because
that's
if I don't, then there might be a lot of people wanting to take a shower again.
Yeah. And of course, just as an aside, you know, everything in this environment is like that. Right. You know, everybody's favorite usually is the shoes.
Right.
You know, you got the right shoes on in the wrong place. Yeah. It's like, well, what happened? Where was my attention? Where was I when I didn't change my shoes?
And the interesting,
it's really helpful that way because it really gives us a mirror, like you're talking about.
And it's interesting to me, not only where was I, but it's interesting that enough of me or life was present that it came to me that mm-hmm. that hadn't happened. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, how did that happen again? You know?
Yeah. It's similar to what we were talking about earlier, because what I heard you say was you were attending to your, you know, cleaning up after yourself. Mm-hmm. And so your attention was really there, and then your attention left to something that was happening in the future.
Right. I was on to the next.
On to
the next part of the program.
That's mm-hmm. So there's a birth of a somebody.
Right. Yeah.
So you're a separate self suddenly. You're not present.
Yeah.
And at the same time, with that last piece, there's an awareness that's happening while that's going on.
Yeah.
So later on, you kind of woke up to the fact that you were somebody.
Yeah.
And you that awareness is suddenly there again. It's just like the car. Okay,
exactly.
The information drops in. Oh, yeah. I wasn't, I didn't put the flip side. I wasn't there for that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting how that literally just arose, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh.
Somebody didn't think of it.
Somebody didn't think of it, but mm-hmm. somebody knew that was part of the program.
And it really wasn't a somebody, was it?
No, right. It wasn't. Some life, some information knew that that was part of the program, and it arrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there also was a willingness to take care of that, which I would imagine also does not come from the somebody.
Right.
That comes from here also.
No, it doesn't come from somebody.
I made it all the way back to my hermitage.
That's right. No, from a somebody it would be like,
forget it.
I have to go all the way back.
And, you know, it just really emphasizes the difference between those two places that people are talking about. Because that's an unhappy place. Even a small thing like that, to make a decision like, no, screw it, I don't care about that.
Exactly.
That's a really unhappy place. And there's that kind of just rolls through time, especially if we're practicing that. We're practicing being a somebody and suffering in that way. If we're practicing the other, even though, I mean, it's probably a lovely walk over back to the outhouse. I mean, you know, you're just present for it.
Yeah.
We don't get what somebody says we are supposed to get on the outside. but we absolutely get everything that we want on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also had a little experience that was started out talking about the difference in the working meditation and from one place and the other place. And I had a bit of an experience in the night last night of the difference of a thing that I have that happens that goes on in the night and being with it in that other way. So I've been with it in the, oh God, you know, the suffering way. This is happening again. I don't know what to do about this. I hate this. What is it? And to have to be there with the exact same sensations, but just from watching. Mm-hmm. Oh wow, that happens, and then that happens, and there would be times when it was just, I mean, I had a long time to watch it, and there were times when I looked, what it felt like, the words that came, I mean, were it like riding a wave of peace. Mm-hmm. Even though it was the same physical experience of something that has caused absolute terror in the past.
Completely different experience with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really does come down to your attention again, doesn't it? So instead of your attention being on the story about how this is awful and everything that it means, your attention is just on, you're just paying attention.
Yeah, just paying attention.
And then there's that place where there's that space and you added peace. You know, there's kind of like a just a feeling of a wave of peace moving through it.
And then there will be times when a little bit of the uh-oh would come back again.
Starting to go back into the story.
Starting back the story, and I was there enough to see, oh, when I do that, that's how it affects what's going on. I mean, it was almost like a scientific experiment. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm believing that story, and it's starting to feel different. Mm-hmm. And then I would drop the story again and
move back.
Mm-hmm. But it was really, when the first discussion took place, I thought, I know that exact experience.
Yeah, and that it's something we can practice. That's the amazing thing to me.
Yeah.
We really aren't the victim to our circumstances. We're also not the victim to the voices.
Right.
We actually can practice having a life that we want instead of just being pushed around by everything.
Thank you.
Susan, I saw your hands.
I just think it's been pointed out, but the thing I was watching was that when I'm with somebody, the information comes in and it's silly.
Oh, so the information still drops in.
If the information drops in, so I know many a times I'm thinking if I'm really present, although I'm not being really present, I have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking I'm going to see something. So I like the grocery store example. So I'm looking for my car. I'm not looking for the door. You know, so if I'm not present, if I'm with somebody and it tells me where the door is, that's silly. I need to know where my car is.
I don't need to know where the door is. I've already done that.
No,
I need to know where the car is.
But, you know, it's sort of like when I came to practice, you know, here's what it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. I'm going to practice. I'm going to train. I'm actually going to live in a monastery for a year. And then I'm going to feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to look this way.
Mm-hmm.
Completely missing what it's really... You know, when I like that, I miss the information that's going to lead me to freedom. So the door is going to lead me to my car when I'm present.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not when I'm with somebody.
Yeah. And we can never know where it's going to go, can we?
No. And if we're really present, and sort of the thing also, well, the cooking, you know, maybe how I can totally relate, but the information comes in. But I'm doing this right now.
Yeah, no thank you.
I have to get... You know,
I'm doing this my way, thank you.
Yeah, and that small focus. Mm-hmm. But when we're present, it's just, oh, thank you. Yeah, that's got to go now. Okay. But, and the same thing with the flipping, you know, how many times does that happen? We forgot to flip the outhouse or whatever. And just watching the process of people will deal. Or I'm going to walk back and, you know, that it's just two different experiences of life.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm present, it's just the next thing. Oh gosh, I forgot to flip the thing. I gotta go back.
Right. So for you, how would you talk about the how of that? The how of moving between those two places?
Well, you know, the thing I was on a call this morning, and the thing that we were looking at is curiosity, or that spirit of inquiry, or being really present.
Uh-huh.
In life, a lot, it's just doing the next thing. So the shoe needs to be tied. Mm-hmm. I may think she should have already tied it because I need to be to the car by now, mm-hmm. but that's not helpful.
Right.
Just turn the attention into what is here, mm-hmm. presenting itself in front of me.
Yeah.
And for me, it's also the breath. You know, come back to what is here. You know, and not, don't scratch the itch on the cushion. You know, it's such a big one for me. Just trust what people suggest here to practice with.
So what I hear you saying is, it's very simple, isn't it? It really is just practicing having your attention here and not colluding with the voices. That was said earlier, too. But I think that's what you mean by not scratching the itch on the cushion.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're staying on your experience. You're not believing the story. You're not going with the agendas that the voices are presenting to you. You're just being here with what is and then just doing the next thing that's in front of you. And the enormous amount of trust and faith that's involved in that, that will lead us where we want to go. And of course, it absolutely will.
Yeah, what I've noticed in all this is that life has a sense of humor. And the mind, at least in my experience, can play tricks on me. Mm-hmm. Or things, it doesn't mean everything's going to be, not, there's going to be no mistakes or anything. But what I have noticed is when I'm not somebody, it's just funny.
It's just funny when that happens.
It's what, yeah, it's like I'm a source of entertainment for myself. It's just funny.
Kind of like you watch yourself on television or something.
Well, it's something, you know. It's just, it makes me laugh. But when I'm a somebody.
Ooh. It's very personal, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like how strong, how something's wrong. You know, well, it really goes to that and that, you know, done it again. Just whatever it wants to go to.
Yeah, I just think this, seeing as you were saying that, it's kind of like you're going, instead of being, you know, instead of being Phil, you're kind of like going along with Phil.
Right.
So Phil's doing this, Phil's doing that. Maybe sometimes Phil's believing things that aren't true. Mm-hmm. Maybe Phil is falling for the voices. Phil's doing unskillful things. But because you're not Phil, you don't take that, you don't take any of that as something that's happening to you. And so it's possible to have some space around it. Even a sense of humor, it's like, like, isn't she cute because she's, you know, stumbling around doing all these things?
Right, that's a nice image, way to put it. And I see it as, like, in some fashion, we're together, whatever this is, you know, it's like what you're saying, that there's just this sense of being with Phil, mm-hmm. And not actually being her. And when that's there, yeah, that's when it's just... It's yeah. just
gosh, and there's so much... potential for love there.
Lots of compassion.
And compassion.
And
kindness.
And entertainment.
And entertainment. Yeah. And in a way, I think that it's not hurtful to her.
No.
Because she, you know, for her, because like you say, Phil, you know, this, I mean, we're talking about somebody, we're just kind of giving
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah. So for Phil, like you say, it really is, and other people would say, it's life and death. It's painful when these things happen. There's all this stuff that means, you know, success and failure. It's, you can be good or bad in Phil's world. And so on her own, she's never really going to find her way out of that because she completely believes in it. She's completely, or at least habitually, in the way that she was trained, she is in relationship with the voices. And so when they say, you're a bad person, she thinks, she believes, I'm a bad person. So she really needs somebody who is really close by and is kind of in touch with all of her experience, which we are, but who doesn't believe the voices, and can help her understand that all that stuff that she believes in that's so painful and hurtful isn't true. And then it can be fun. It can be, you know, an exploration. Life can be a game in which we're kind of learning how to do stuff. You know, it's just another aspect of those two different worlds.
Yeah, and then Phil Lapp was like the stepping back the whole mind of something that just embraces mm-hmm. all of it. And it's almost like a field that doesn't have
no boundaries.
No boundaries, yeah. And And so, yeah, I mean, and when that's there, there's no separation with that.
Right. It's kind of like you're hurt, but you're not hurt at the same time. Yeah. And would you agree that you're not a somebody when you're doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing as people, you know, the wave of peace or the bliss in just watching a window. Yeah. It's that same place in relationship to the person who suffers. Yeah. And the kind of the natural, what's natural there is kindness and compassion and unconditional love. Yeah, and humor and fun.
Life's more fun.
Life's way more fun. Yeah. Chris.
So along those same lines, I find that when I'm a somebody, there's almost always some kind of an expectation about how life's going to go, and that it's almost never true. And I fall for it all the time. It's like there's a linear path to go from where I am to some place where I'm going to be different or feel better or something like that.
Yeah.
And what life is doing is kind of zigzagging around in some other location.
Uh-huh.
And when I switch tracks, it's just completely fascinating to see what drops in and when.
Mm-hmm.
That I might be something like in the kitchen and not knowing anything other than there's a jar in front of me and it needs to go to some other location.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's the only cue I'm getting from life is to go through that.
Right.
And then as I get to where the jar needs to go, then the next thing drops in. Maybe it's something that's really big, like I left the tree sign. Like that. And when I'm a somebody, it's never that I would need to move that jar in order to get that piece of information. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not the way you would do that. The way you would do that is think about it somehow.
Or,
just try to remember those kinds of things. Or something like that.
So I think you're describing being led.
Yeah,
so exactly. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then how much different that is, though, being somebody. Yeah.
Being
led by something completely different than life.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't see that when I said that a minute ago, but you're being led either way, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just being led by something that, might we say, cares about you, or at least it feels that way. I mean, who knows what's really going on. But is interested in you having the information that you need, and, being successful in what you're trying to do, feeling good about yourself, or being led by something that is messing everything up all the time, sabotaging. It really wants you to feel bad about yourself, wants you to feel like a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we're being led in either case.
Yeah.
But we have a choice about what's leading us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, that's the real crux of spiritual practice.
Uh-huh.
Be aware enough, to practice awareness enough that I can really see clearly those two different tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there is enough awareness to switch to that place I think we were talking about earlier, the how place. So, I know I'm somebody and I know I'm with that whatever that is that really doesn't want me to do well in life. And what do I need to do? Where does my attention need to be? All those things that we're talking about.
Yeah, where does my attention need to be to kind of get back into alignment?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that awareness is the key, isn't it?
It's
so
everything.
You have a lot of experience with those two different places. You know what it's like to be in, we talk about it as a light room. You know what that feels like. You know what it feels like to be in the dark room. And so that will, because you're aware of that, like if you're in the dark room, you're aware that you're in the dark room.
Yeah.
And so you're also aware that there's some tools that you can apply. You can take apart kind of what's happening. All the stuff that's going to happen over the next days in the retreat. There's tools you can apply that can assist you in sort of in moving yourself from the one to the other.
Yep. Exactly.
Thank you. Yes?
So when we think we make decisions, actually we don't. We are being led either way, we are in the dark room or in the light room.
What's your experience?
My experience is that when I meet someone, mm-hmm. I think I am the one who made the decisions. But based on what I have heard this morning, it's not true.
Yeah, but that seems slow, isn't it? So let me reflect that. So if you think you're a somebody, you think you're the one who made the decision.
Yes.
But you didn't actually make the decision. This thing that we call conditioning made the decision. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So.
But if we are being led, so we don't make the decisions. We think that way mm-hmm. when we are being someone, which unfortunately in my particular case is most of the time.
Yeah. You're not the only one.
But now, based on the level of awareness, the acknowledgement I'm receiving this morning, mm-hmm. I see that I am being led by when I don't pretend that my ego is there, life and awareness and intelligence is dropping all this information in me, and I am being led.
Yeah.
But my ego is letting me, oh yes, you make the decision. I don't worry, you are in the dark room or the light room, who cares?
Who cares? That's what it says.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good, isn't it? And so now the work is to learn to see the difference between the two. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what everybody's been talking about this morning is we can be aware, is the information coming in? Because this is dropping in information too. Yeah. Right? We just don't see that. So is the information coming from here, from the conditioned mind, or is the information coming from life? And we can learn to see the difference. And a lot of times, you know, it's sort of a trial and error sort of a thing, because we don't know. You know, some information drops in, we say, okay, we go with that, and we suffer. Because that's always what happens when we go with the information here. When the information drops in from here and we go with that, we don't suffer. And so there's a real practical kind of way that we can, you know, experiment, and we can learn the difference between those two. Yeah. So I wonder, so even with that little insight, can you see the power that has to kind of make a difference in?
Well, for me, it's not that little. I mean, honestly, I mean, it's huge mm-hmm. because, you know, my whole life I was living in a lie. Well, my ego is guiding me to say it was this way. When this morning I discovered it's not, it's so not. For you maybe little, for me it's huge. Maybe because you know that so many, many years ago, for you it's not, but for me it's like, really?
Well, it really is huge. I mean, it really is a difference between a happy life and an unhappy life.
Yes.
It really, really is.
Yes. Yeah.
Congratulations. Yes.
This conversation for me is very exciting. I have frequently found that I've articulated what I'm wanting to do, which is to learn to be an old person.
You want to learn how to be an old person?
Yes. And that creates a lot of negative reactions from folks. And I realized it was probably because until I just heard this vocabulary, it wasn't the vocabulary I wanted. One of the things that I find happening to me naturally is that what we're calling somebodies that I acquired over my lifetime are naturally finished. So I was a mother and raised my children. That mother no longer needs to exist. And I was a teacher and for 43 years and I retired and that teacher no longer needs to exist. And so the question is, who am I? So what am I? As these somebodies, and I hadn't articulated for myself in quite this way, but I find it very exciting.
That is exciting. Well, what I'm getting from what you're saying is being a, did you say old person?
Well, I use that word, but what I mean is there are natural stages in life.
Yeah.
And I'm entering a stage I've never entered before.
Right.
And I haven't found the words or the conversation. Sort of like when I was 10, I knew what a teenager was supposed to be doing, and then I knew what a young adult was supposed to be doing. I had some guidance through life stages. And And so when they came upon me, when suddenly boys turned from being ooky to being interesting. There was, within my culture and in my training and everything, that road was sort of prepared for me,
right,
in a way, and my next tasks and the education.
It was all kind of laid out for you.
It was all laid out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this stage is not laid out, and some of what is laid out, I'm experiencing as the panic when our somebody's disappear to grab another somebody.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I'm so glad you can see that, because boy, there's a lot of unhappiness in that direction.
Either we overmeddle in lives, or we try to hold on to things that I have observed, things that are outgrown. And I hadn't been able to quite say it before it fell without us. It's like, what is that? Moving into that ground where there isn't a somebody, where there's that spacious freedom, which sometimes I experience is also a little frightening.
Well, somebody does.
Somebody gets really anxious.
That's exactly what you're looking at. Yeah. So what I'm hearing what you're saying is this stage of life for you is all about who are you without all these somebodies.
Yes.
You're also experiencing the reaction of somebodies to that possibility.
Right.
Because really you're talking about the movement out of what we talked about here as conditioned mind.
Right.
And all the suffering that goes with that, to just being who you are, or who or what you are, whatever that might be. So of course, this long time habit of being a somebody is going to resist that and fight that, because it's used to being in charge. But you can see that that's going on. You can also see that's happening to other people you know, and that's kind of the path that's laid out for people in this stage of life. But that's not what you want. You really want to kind of experiment with, or allow yourself to let go of these somebodies, and just kind of move into that grounded place where you can just experience what's here and who you are in that place.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very exciting. All right, and that's our time. So thank you very much.